Welcome to This Is Us podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Hansen, and my wife and I have the honor of serving alongside an amazing team as lead pastors of Hillsong Church in Denmark and Malmö. This podcast is a collection of short episodes regarding life, leadership, and culture. If you haven't done so already, please click follow and subscribe. And as always, if you find this to be valuable, feel free to share it with others. All right, well, we are back with Peter Prothero, the myth. The legend, the master, and we are privileged because we have been joined with our amazing team, our staff here at Hillsong Church Denmark and Malmö, and we're just going to do a Q&A, largely because a lot of the feedback we get on this podcast is that people are sick and tired of my voice, and so we're going to get some questions rolling for you, Peter, from the team. So let's go.
Cool.
Hello, Peter.
Hi.
A question for you. You talked a little bit earlier about generational leadership.
Right.
And what do you do when you see someone who is where you believe you're ready to step up, but they don't believe it themselves?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think the word encouragement is what comes to my mind. And so I try to think of what kind of context could I create where they could gain a win that would help them overcome possibly fear, self-doubt, whatever it is they're struggling with. And so I think when Jesus sent the disciples out in Matthew 10, he was highly prescriptive. He said, look, don't go to the Gentiles, go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Don't greet anyone along the way. Don't take with you a bag of money. Don't do this, don't do this. Do this, preach the kingdom, heal the sick. So everything's highly prescriptive in order to lead to some kind of success. And they were successful. They came back and gave a report. And then it's repeated in Luke 10, the 70 do the same. And so what I try to do, if people struggle with self-doubt or fear, I try to set up a situation where they can succeed to show them the potential that they carry. That's how I do it.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
What advice would you give us? We have a 13-year-old who doesn't want to come to church. He thinks it's boring and, well, everything's boring because he's a teenager, unless he's playing a game. And we've been dragging him along. And I got to the stage where I thought, I don't want him to hate it. But on the other hand, we're the parents and we make the decision. So what would you recommend we do?
Yeah, that's a really tricky one with 13-year-olds. I guess one of the questions I would be asking is, what kind of friendships does he have? Yeah, no friendships whatsoever. And that's a key. And so I would be talking with the youth leader and with the people of that age in his group and asking the question, is there somebody who could be like a big brother or a big sister to him and reach out to him, even outside of the context of church, actually? And just see if there's some area of commonality that they can find that will win him. And then the other thing, and I was talking to Kat about this earlier, is with teenagers, everything for them is about attention. And when teenagers play up, one of the reasons they do it is because it gets attention. So, in other words, better to be bad and noticed than good and unnoticed. And when you catch that as a parent, you then need to be intentional about spending time with them. So I remember there was a shift with our family where I said to the girls, one at a time, and I just said, look, on Wednesday night, you've got me for an hour. We'll do anything you want to do. We'll watch TV. We'll play a game. We'll go shopping. We'll go for a drive. Tell me what you want to do, and you've got me for an hour on your agenda. And they loved it. They absolutely loved it. You know, and sometimes it was stretching me, you know, particularly the shopping bit. Not my favorite thing. But you have to make it about them, and that they're noticed, and that they have a part to play in your life, and that they are not second to ministry. And we may not mean to convey that message to kids, but I think sometimes we do. And you've just got to be intentional about making interventions that say, no, actually, you are really important. You know, this is my job. I have a responsibility here, but, you know, we can plan time and I will take time for you. And so I think those two things together can win teenagers. But it's never usually one thing. It's, do they have a friendship, and can you somehow set that up and allow it to evolve organically? And can you as a parent send a message to them that they are important to you and how they feel is important?
Hey, what advice would you give someone in terms of growing their capacity and wanting to grow as a leader?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, nobody makes any significant change in their life out of the context of relationships. In other words, you seldom make a change because you read a book. A book might inspire you to change, but it's not until you say something to somebody about that who then holds you accountable for it. And so any significant change you make in your life, you make because of a set of relationships you're in where you trust this person to hold you accountable. And so if you're somebody who you feel has plateaued, that would be a question I would ask to the team I serve with and the person I'm accountable to. And I'd just, hey, what do you reckon? And of course that, you know, that presumes that there's an environment where people can be honest. Because I've been in situations where somebody asked that question and I was shocked at how everybody in the circle was avoiding speaking the truth, you know, until it came to me. And I just said, hey, you guys, I know what all of you have said to me personally about this guy, and none of you are saying it to his face. I said, so I'm going to say something now, you know, and I've said it. Quite straightforwardly, because he asked straightforwardly, and we were in a sort of trusting, I thought we were in a trusting circle. But all these other folks were just like, they didn't want to say it. It's like, you're not helping this guy here. You're not helping. You're affirming the wrong thing. And so I became the guy to say it. And then he looked at them and said, do you think Peter's right? You know, and they all went, you know, there's a little nod of acknowledgement. And then he goes, oh, wow, I never realized that. And then the conversation became, okay, so what are we going to do about this now? You know, how are you going to make a shift? How are you going to make a change? And we need to be intentional about doing that, or you need to think, is this really the zone that you should be in?
How do you balance the practicals of building church with the relationships? Is there a ratio? What do you do?
So do you mean, I guess what you mean by that is the practicals as in?
As the practicals happening throughout the week and on a Sunday.
Yeah, as opposed to the friendships you have with those people.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I look at it like this, that when I'm on a coffee break, when I'm on a lunch break, when I'm out to dinner or the cinema, I'm with friends. You know, we might talk about church, we might talk about stuff, but really, you know, we're off the clock, as it were. You know, we might talk about issues that we then bring into the workplace, but really we're off the clock. Now, when I'm doing the practical stuff, I'm in a team meeting or I'm talking to a person, but I'm not talking to them now primarily as a friend. I'm talking to them as somebody developing them and talking about priorities and schedules or stuff like that. Then I'm just in a different zone. And so I don't try to be friends with everybody. And one of the things that we say to our church is, look, friendship is organic. It happens. And just because your wife is best friends with this girl doesn't mean you have to be best friends with the husband. You know, I think that's very forced. I've seen that, you know, just, it's awful. You know, when couples click with couples, that's great. you know, when the wives click, it's the wives clicking. Just accept it. They like hanging out together. And when the guys click, they click. Just accept it. That's how it is. So I've tried to work on the basis, let's not force anything. Let's let it be organic. Let's acknowledge where the friendships lie and not be insecure about it. Because when I'm functioning out of my grace gift, when others are functioning out of their grace gift, you know, it's not about having favorites then. It's not about choosing your friends. It's about choosing who you think is best for that role.
Peter, you've been talking a bit about grace and working in your grace zone and how you can be in a where you can outgrow your grace for that particular job.
Yes.
Can you say a bit more about that? Like, how do you know that you're operating in your grace zone? Does that mean that it's going to be easy all the time?
No, it doesn't mean it's easy, but it does mean it's joyful. That's a sense of satisfaction. So when Psalm 103 says, serve the Lord with gladness, you know, I could have a really tough day or even a tough week or tough month. But if I stand back and evaluate the year and I take it as a composite picture, I should be able to say, I love doing that. Yeah, there were some real crap moments in there. Yeah, there were some really tough things I had to deal with or I had to personally go through. But if I take it overall, I loved it and I love doing it. And when that goes, when you look back over a whole year and you're saying, I never want to do that again, then that's a clear sign something shifted. And so for me, it's like it fits like a glove. There's a sense of joy. There's a sense of accomplishment. There's a sense of satisfaction in what you're doing. And that should be the dominant motif, even though there are moments where you just want to pull your hair out or just say, oh, how long, oh Lord?
Can I ask a follow-up question then? What about when you see it on others where that you don't think they might be operating in their grace zone anymore if you're starting to notice these things? Like, is that something that's personal, that's only me, or is that something a leader would potentially notice as well, and
yes,
would that
yes.
be able to help each other?
Yes, I think a leader would notice that and pick up on it. And I think it's an opportunity to say something and just say, hey, bro, you know, look, we go through tough seasons, but I just feel like I just sense the joy and enthusiasm you had for this is has been missing for too long. And that's a question worth exploring and asking yourself about. Because I'm asking, and let's be in a dialogue about this. But you shouldn't persist in this for too long, because it has the potential to rob you of life, of just feeling good about what you're doing. You know, maybe there's a shift that we need to be aware of.
Yeah, that's a big can to open.
It is a big can to open, and you don't want to do it with too many people at the same time.
Right.
You know, so I'm measured in what I do. I don't sit, you know, six people on the team down and say I have the same conversation. It's like
it's in like, the same department.
Yes, it's like who's the crucial one here that I need to see a shift with? And here's the great thing is if it's successful, that becomes powerful for the next conversation.
Mm.
You know, if it's not successful, then you sort of might want to wait a season and just say, okay, let's let the dust settle on this one. It didn't go as well as I'd hoped. Because sometimes people react and they kind of walk out and say, well, if that's the way you feel. It's like, you know, when people do that to me and they've done it, I just say, look, I'm really trying to help you here. You know, I'm not your enemy. I'm your champion here. I'm for you, but I'm just being honest with what I see. Have you talked about this with your wife? How does she feel? I'd love to have another conversation with her here, or with your husband, or whatever. And I just, you know, can't we just keep this conversation going? I've tried to highlight things today in order for us to find a way forward here. That's all I've tried to do, just honestly. you know, people will react. They say, oh, you know, sod off and walk off. And then 24 hours later, they ring up and they say, okay, you know, I've had a chance to calm down. Yeah, I think another conversation would be good. Mm. And it's because potentially we feel threatened. Potentially it's like, you know, okay, are we talking about my income now? Are we talking about my role? Are we talking about my title? You know, we get invested in those things in a way that's unhealthy. Mm. That's why I talked about holding it lightly, and that's not easy to do. But I think it is worthwhile having those conversations.
But you've held your income lightly.
I have.
I mean, how old were you when you gave up your, like when you handed the church over?
I was 65.
So you're 65 years old and you're handing over 70% of your income without a backup plan.
Yes.
Just talk us through that.
Well.
Because it doesn't matter whether you're 65 or 35. That can be scary. That's daunting.
Yes.
It's same when you gave up, you know, full-time tenure in Denmark and then took over a church of 35 people.
Yeah, and they paid me 2 days a week. Well, actually, they didn't pay me they didn't pay me at all for the first 3 months. And then for a year, they paid me 2 days a week. And then for the second year, I think they paid me 3 or 4 days a week. So it was like into the third year before I even had a full-time salary there.
Yes, yeah, so just talk us through that.
Well, again, everything – I've tried to make decisions in life looking for three things. Being married, so first of all, is there unity with my wife? Is there agreement? Secondly, are we in faith for this? Can we both look at each other? And if she's not in faith, she says, look, I trust you. You're in faith for this. I trust you. I'm okay to go along with this. Or I do the same with her. You know, sometimes she's in faith and I say, okay, darling, I trust you. We've been in this together a long time. This is your faith, but I'm not going to point the finger at you if it doesn't work. You know, so unity, faith, and then peace. Have we got peace about it? So like with these decisions, Jackie was very involved in these decisions. Mm. You know, the problem with my wife is she's way ahead of me on this stuff. Way ahead. Oh, yeah, I've got peace about that. Oh, yeah, God will provide. It's like, you know, and I'm looking at her and saying, could you protest a little bit, please? You know,
because there's the feeling of peace.
Yeah.
And then there's the position of peace.
Yeah. And then what I did do was as I was coming up to resigning, I did talk to some church leaders who I knew well and say, look, I'm moving into a new phase. I'm not going to have a secure income. Just could you... You know, when I come and speak with you, could you just recognize that I really need your generous support when I come? And some of them were really practical. And he said, well, how much do you want? Some of them said that to me. And I said, well, look, if I do a weekend for you, Saturday, Sunday, I need at least 1,500 euro, maybe 2,000 euro. I said, that would be brilliant. I said, you'll get me. You know, I'll do a Friday night for you. I'll do a Saturday morning seminar. I'll speak one-to-one with some of your key leaders. I'll preach for you on Sunday. I said, if you could do that for me, it'd be brilliant. And some of them said, you'll give us all that? You're like, yeah, but you can give me more if you want. But, right. but that would help me. And so a number of churches said, yeah, we'll do that for you. We'll have you at least once a year, maybe twice a year, and put that package together. Mm. And so there's a number of churches I do that for. And then there's other leaders who ask me for coaching, and I never charge for that, but they just say, no, you've served me well. I'm going to give you this. Mm. I want to give you this gift for that. So I knew there were enough friends who sort of would make up about a third of the salary. I knew my home church would, at least for the first year or two, do a third. And then it was just trusting the Lord for the rest, just through travel and stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I kind of did think it through, but there was an element there of just a bit risky. And I, you know, unlike professional people, you know, they work for 30, 40 years for a company and then they have a pension. I mean, all the teachers who worked at the Bible College have a pension and a really good one. And I don't have that. you know, because I've been a pioneer, I've been a, you know, an out there. But I've just said to myself, God called me, God's responsible, he'll take care of me. I say that to myself. It's my self-talk. I'm going to trust in the Lord with all my heart, not lean on my own understanding.
That's great.
So something a little bit different. you know, we are a lot of people together in church, on team and everything, and it's not everybody who agrees with the same things or have differences in opinions, all that kind of jazz. What do you do when you are, when you don't agree with a decision that your leader has made, or, you know, with something where you're like, well, how do I, you know, how do you make sure that you, when a decision is made that you maybe not agree with, that you are still healthy about how to move on, or how do you move on in a good way?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it kind of depends how you function as a team. But here's my take. When we have meetings, we have information sharing, we have discussion, we have decision making. Depending on what level of unity you're operating at depends on what you can achieve in one meeting. So in the early days of building team and building trust in one another, it's best to split those three things. So if I share 1 week information that I want you to process, we won't discuss it till the following week. Just to give you time to process the information, take it all in, and perhaps ask a few questions along the way before we get to discussion. Now, just giving that time frame allows people to then discuss intelligently. Now, what I discovered was that in the early days I did meetings, I did all three things in one meeting. Now, people who are process people, they cannot make a decision until they sleep on it. Now, I'm an intuitive leader. I can make a decision in a second. And most of the time, it can be a good decision. But I've worked with people who are process people. They just cannot go there. They cannot do it. And so what you do is if you press it, you just create tension. And then they'll agree because there's the pressure of the moment. And then 24 hours later, they're ringing you up and saying, I've had a bad night's sleep. I just don't agree with this, you know, da-di-da-di-da. So by splitting it up, you remove that pressure, you remove that tension. Then when it comes to discussion, again, it depends on the level of unity you've got. But if everybody in the room says, yeah, that's right, you make the decision there and then. If you already feel like there's a difference of opinion here, then as a leader, you have to make a decision. Do I feel like there's enough equity in the relationship and enough of a leaning towards a decision that I can make the call today, or should I delay it? And sometimes I make the call and I'm relying on the equity I've built with people, the trust that they have in me as a leader. And sometimes I delay a decision, say, guys, we're not going to make a decision today. We're going to take another week to think about it, pray about it, process it a little more. And if there's people in the room who are disagreeing with me as a leader, I might have a one-on-one conversation, say, hey, can we just talk this out a little bit, just you and me? What is it that's your real biggest concern? What is it that you find difficult about saying yes to this? But when we're in a room as a team and we make a decision, I say, now, when we leave this room, we're all going to say, we've agreed. That's our language. We agree. We've decided. You know, I don't want anyone, especially if it goes south, I don't want anyone saying, well, I didn't really believe in it anyway. You know, that's a way to kill a team unity. And so because I want people to say that, I want people to have enough time to have processed. And that's something you kind of have to negotiate as a team, really. So for me, decision-making can be made really fast when trust is high and you've really built strong unity because you come into agreement quickly. But when you're still getting to know each other, still getting to know where's the strength of this person, Because the danger is you get somebody on a team who constantly acts like a brake. You're trying to press the throttle and the brake is constantly being applied. And so if I see a pattern in a team where there's one particular person who's always saying, you know, who's always not in agreement, or I need more time, I need more time. You know, I might come to the point where I say, look, in the context of this team, we don't have, because of the growth of where we are, the speed of which we're moving, we can't afford to have you delaying these decisions all the time. It's not working for me. And so I might say, I'd like you to resign from this team. So I've done that a few times. And it's not that you don't want process, but you don't want unnecessary delay either.
Yeah. I have one more question. You touched a bit on unity within team as well.
Yeah.
As a multi-site church as well, and with a lot of different layers.
Yeah.
How do you make sure there's unity across layers?
Well, I try and get whoever is like a location pastor, campus pastor, whatever language you want to use, think globally, act locally. In other words, think of the whole when you're making decisions, but you have to translate that into your local context. But think your decisions impact the whole. And so what you want to avoid is what is often called by management gurus silo thinking. Do you understand what I mean when I use that expression? You want to avoid silo thinking. That's true. Even if you've just got one church, by the way, you can get silo thinking between departments. And so when you're appointing leaders, you want people who don't only look out for what they're involved with, but they look out for the whole. How is this impacting the whole? Because there might be something really good for your locality that's going to hurt the whole. And then you just have to be cautious and say, well, because that's not going to build unity. That's going to cause division. So that's one way of doing it.
We're pretty much run by social media. And I'm always really cautious about what I post and what it's about. For example, my government, and I'm talking about the UK here, not the Danish one, because it's still, that's my government. But
wow,
there's so much. Sorry, okay. Because I can't even.
How many
I'm
years
not allowed
have you
to
lived
vote here?
Here?
I'm not allowed to vote for this one. I really want to say what I think. And then I think, as a Christian, should I just be saying that I'm praying for my government, which of course I do, and I pray for wisdom and for leaders to really take account of what they've been doing, blah, blah, blah. But as a Christian, should I be vocal about what I think, or should I? Because I feel like I should be outspoken for the vulnerable. And so, you know, what wisdom would you say about how much I should post on social media, or my opinion or whatever?
Well, this is a tricky one. I don't think social media in general is a great platform for real debate. I think everything gets reduced to sound bites, and it becomes a platform for extreme views and polarization. And so, as tempted as I am sometimes myself, I hold back from doing anything on Facebook other than simple notices and something edifying, and we had a great time at Tivoli and stuff like that. I think we need to find different platforms for genuine debate and genuine engagement. And I'm disappointed that we haven't created that. You know, in Britain, we have question time, which to me is actually a pretty good legitimate platform for having some really honest debate around very serious issues. But social media doesn't lend itself for that. And then you can end up being blanked and cancelled and all of that stuff goes with that. And so I think social media is a great platform for information and notification. And that's about it.
I'll finish strong. Now, we just to keep it real, we are obviously in the middle of a leadership transition of our church globally. And, you know, people will often experience leadership transitions, whether it's locally or on a team or a department. Now, I'm not asking you to say, what should we do on a global level? But for those who are under leadership, those who sit under someone's leadership and now transitioning from that person to the new person, from an old leader to a new leader, whether it's a global scale, local church, department, location, what are some of the keys that you have found, even looking at you transitioning to church, not from your point of view, because you're the leader, but from the regular churchgoer, from the regular team member, what were some of the things that you were hoping that they would do, that they would apply, that they would exercise of, you know, thinking, actions, whatever, principles that has helped that transition?
Boy, you guys ask good questions, don't you?
Yes, we do.
I think what I hope for is that people will do, again, to quote Martin Luther King Jr., he says, I look forward to a day when my children will be judged by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. So with transitioning any leader, I want people to look at, is this person trustworthy? Is their character that's been demonstrated over a period of time, trustworthiness that I have seen? And is there a level of competence, or to use a language I used earlier, is there grace on this person's life to function in this role? And my hope is that they would look at those two things primarily and not the personality thing or the charisma thing, but rather the grace on their life and their competence and their character to see that through in a way that's with integrity and honesty and transparency and trustworthiness. Those are the kinds of things I'm hoping people will do. And so when people say to me, oh, we miss your preaching, you know, I just say, oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. Maybe I'll be speaking in the next month or so. And when I stood down, I actually didn't preach for 8 months. We agreed it would be six, but then it was actually eight. And of course, when I came back and did preach then, just to give Mark time to settle into his role and to establish his leadership and vision and stuff for the next phase, people were very appreciative of hearing me. And now I speak fairly regularly, I don't know, once every 6 weeks maybe. So they're the kinds of things I want people to do.
That's great. Well, again, thank you, Peter. Thank you for digging wells in and out of season that you can draw from them.
You're welcome.
In moments like this. We appreciate you and we love you. So thank you.
Such an honor to be with you. Thanks, friends.
Thanks. Thank you for listening to This Is Us podcast. Whether you listen to them as an individual or as a team, we hope that they add value to you. Make sure to click follow or subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. Thank you for joining us. We are who we are. This is us.